Hey friends, thanks for being here. This is not a normally scheduled episode, but an extra bit of content we felt was necessary given the current news. As we're putting out our regular episodes, on occasion we'll do these mini episodes with some context and history when some wild shit's going on that we know something about. This conversation was recorded Friday, May 14th, 2021, so throughout the conversation, when we refer to yesterday or a few days ago, you'll know about when we're talking. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay, welcome, welcome. This is Agitated Podcast. A lot going on this week in the Middle East. We've decided that the big agitation on the table that needs to be unwrapped and discussed here is what is happening in Palestine. So I'm gonna start us off with a little bit of grounding on the subject, I guess. But we are now on the heels of, yesterday was the fourth day this week that the Israeli settler colony has bombed the densely populated Palestinian civilian areas. Gaza has been under illegal Israeli military blockade since 2007, holding 2.1 million Palestinians in Gaza in basically an open-air prison. Besieged Gaza is under land, sea, and air blockade by Israel and was actually deemed unfit for human habitation in 2020 by the United Nations. Gaza is the most densely populated place on earth due to Israel's blockade, meaning Palestinians cannot enter or leave. Israel launched their most recent series of airstrikes this past Monday and has been killing Palestinian children and civilians all week. Gaza has been through three massacres in the space of a decade. So, as a little background, I am a Jewish person. I say Jewish by descent. I don't consider myself a religious Jew. And I think it's important here to sort of define, you know, there's many ways to be Jewish. You can be culturally Jewish. You can be religiously Jewish. And now we have this really dangerous creation of this Jewish nationality, where a religious state, a so-called state, has been created. And I also want to sort of define now what Zionism is, which, it's a colonial movement supporting the establishment by any means necessary of a national state for Jews in historic Palestine. And this movement started in the 19th century. But we need to very clearly separate, because people jump on you when you go, when you say, you know, we're against the Zionist movement, that somehow means that you're anti-Semitic, which is completely false. Another huge, harmful piece of misinformation out there, which is actually very intentional propaganda put out there by people benefiting from this conflict, is that this is some sort of a religious war between Arabs and Jews, which is just incorrect on so many levels. First, it ignores the very intentional military occupation and funding from countries such as the U.S. to hold, you know, a very strategic military outpost in that area. It also, you know, very much ignores the communities of Palestinian Christians, Palestinian Jews, and Palestinian Muslims that are being oppressed by the Israeli state that existed together far before the creation of Israel as a colonial presence in that area.
Millie, can I just add something in here? I mean, everything that you're saying is really important context for people to understand, and I think you're saying it really, you know, straightforwardly and commonsensely. I think, though, we also have to, when we're talking about, like, who's oppressing who, we have to remember and bring in the fact that really, in addition to all the things you've said, what Israel also is a U.S. military colony. And it is there in the Middle East for strategic purposes, for the agenda of, you know, U.S. imperialism, which is why the United States is who funds the military of Israel. Our government gives $3.8 billion in military aid, you know, like in 2019. And there's also billions of dollars of loans as well. So Israel wouldn't exist or be possible, and it certainly wouldn't have the positions that it has if it wasn't doing the bidding of the United States government, too. So to the...
Well, and actually prior to that, right, because if we look back even further, why was the Israeli state even created prior to World War II? You know, the British government, you know, much of Europe wanted to consolidate them because of, you know, rising anti-Semitism. And so they... This was predetermined spot in Palestine and then funded by, you know, the British Empire, a lot of European countries such as Germany. And then, you know, it was strategic all along, of course. Where's the oil?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, to the extent that this is a complex situation, which, you know, all my life, that has been a mechanism used to quench critique of Israel's practices and to dehumanize and just obscure what is going on and what the reality is. And to the extent that it is a complex situation, the complexity is not whether Palestinians are being oppressed, and whether they are fighting back and whether that's legitimate. The complexity is the, you know, geopolitics of the way that Israel has been used by the superpowers of the world to carry out an imperialist agenda. And it has shifted over time, you know, who the big superpower is in this world, obviously from Britain to the United States. But, you know, it is our government at this point that is, Israel doesn't do a damn thing that isn't okay with the U.S. military. Ever. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was just going to say, you know, that seems to be a thing that people are talking about more is like, you know, I was always led to believe that this was too complex to take a side on. And there's just so much I don't know and could never know. But what I've found as someone who kind of like, you know, was lazy about it for a good part of my life, was that when I did start to look into it, I found the opposite, right? I found that it became more and more clear exactly what was going on. And, you know, I mean, Hamas was initially supported by Israel, right? Because there was the secular PLO, and then there was the religious Hamas. And Israel wanted that bad boogeyman, you know, and so they, back in, what, the 70s, you know, built up Hamas into what it is today. We see this kind of pattern play out over and over, but, you know.
It's like Hillary Clinton being really excited about Donald Trump running.
Exactly.
Her.
Exactly. Yeah. Elevating the boogeyman. And that's exactly what happened. And Hamas couldn't be where they are doing what they're doing and have this role if Israel at, you know, a previous point did not actively facilitate that happening.
Well, and let's pull apart sort of the propagandization of this situation. And, you know, we obviously, you said 3.8 million a year. We have given more to Israel since
their COVID, our COVID packages, our COVID packages.
3.8 billion. Yeah. No, so, but, and also just like the military brainwashing happening, you know, all Israeli citizens have to serve in the military. So at 18, you are critically brainwashed with this patriotic nationalism.
You go to prison if you don't, right? You know, like, the alternative is prison.
So, but also to, you know, I think look at the other side of just how much power Israel has in the U.S. as well when we examine AIPAC. And, you know, their hold on the Democratic and the Republican Party.
Yeah. It's huge. Yeah. Huge amounts of money. and huge amounts of flex. So, you know, we have seen over the course of just the last, you know, couple years that there has been, you know, some break in that ability for AIPAC to basically, you know, silence anyone. But it's only been very recently that anybody has even been willing to sort of say, you know, that Palestinians are humans or have any leg to stand on in any way. Up until this point, until really recently, it's been, you know, that you can't say anything, otherwise
you are blacklisted. Period.
As a politician and, you know, leader. And this also happens in the media as well.
But we are seeing, you know, as sometimes, you know, both sides-y as it can get, with, you know, the squad and squad adjacent politicians, you know, we are seeing them saying things that have never been said in that milieu before. I was looking at some of the highlights, and of course, it was Representative Cori Bush and Rashida Tlaib who used the strongest language, right? Because Rashida Tlaib, her family is still living in that open air prison. So for her, it's not a both sides situation. And Representative Cori Bush, you know, highlighting the solidarity and common, you know, experiences of people living in Palestine and Black people living in the United States. And so we've never seen that before. And then you get into Ayanna Pressley and AOC, it gets a little more both sides-y, but you know, we've never seen this before. It doesn't change the fact that the mainstream and the party itself is fundamentally aligned deeply with Israel and Israel continuing to conduct itself the way that it does. So who knows how this is going to play out? But
also another huge thing along that line that's sort of broadening the conversation is that Human Rights Watch, which is, you know, has historically been a pretty conservative organization in terms of they weren't even in support of BDS. But they recently came out with a very in-depth study, you know, calling out the state of Israel for crimes against humanity, apartheid and persecution, which is actually a very huge thing to, you know, open the conversation of what's really going on.
And we have to acknowledge the reason why. I know, Jessica, I want you to be able to jump in here, but before we go on, I just want to make sure we say that the reason why these openings that Shelley was talking about in terms of Congress members and just culturally the conversation has shifted is because of BDS, which is the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, which is a Palestinian-led movement promoting boycotts, divestment, and economic sanctions against Israel, modeled on the movement to end apartheid in South Africa. And obviously, BDS has been demonized and, you know, labeled a terrorist organization by many people. And so it's an open conflict in terms of what, you know, what BDS is. But the work that BDS has done on college campuses to insert a different narrative than the dominant U.S.-Israeli narrative has been huge. And that, I would say, is, you know, is the main reason that the conversation has shifted at all and is moving, you know, maybe more in the right direction in terms of what should be being talked about.
Thank you so much for saying that. Yeah, and for defining BDS. Also, I think that we should mention, like, the role that Christian evangelicals and Christian Zionism plays in the support of Israel by the United States. Like, the far-right Christian evangelical Zionist movement, it has a lot of political power in the United States, and they also have a lot of money. And that wing of things very much supports the state of Israel, and also, you know, the support of a Jewish return to the land of Israel parallels in many ways the ideas that, you know, Jews ought to be encouraged to become Christians as a means of fulfilling this biblical prophecy. So, you know, you have this intense evangelical support for Israel that's still rooted in anti-Semitism, right? Because it's the idea that, well, eventually we'll turn them into Christians and fulfill the Bible. Right. So that plays a role too.
Them.
Right.
Or
exactly.
Eradicate them.
So that's, again, like, there are complexities here, but they're not where people are telling you to look. The complexity is not that, you know, Arabs and Jews have been fighting each other since the dawn of civilization, and there's nothing that we can do about it because it's just, you know, at this point ingrained in those peoples, and it's just a sad, tragic thing, and hopefully they'll figure it out someday. That is not the two sides of the argument. But there are all these players who are using all of these complex cultural racist narratives for the benefit of, you know, agendas, and, you know, at the expense of, you know, Palestinian people. And also the other thing too that I think that we need to say in terms of context and understand, again, as Americans, because one of the things that, you know, just is really agitating about this situation is how much is obscured, and how, to the extent sometimes when Americans start to sort of weigh in and sort of decree, and we're acting like there's not blood all over our mm-hmm. hands, we're acting like the policies and methods that Israel is using to violently try to genocide the people of Palestine is not exactly what the U.S. government did to Native Americans on this continent. And in fact, that's, you know, that's part of why they don't even have to start from scratch. They can just, you know, look up what the United States did in the name of Manifest Destiny. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the same.
Well, and opening this conversation in honest terms, among Americans, we, you know, we are forced to reflect on our own colonial history and our own genocide that occurred for us to, you know, mm-hmm. claim this land as
or
ours.
Or we should be, but I mean, if there's nothing that's more American than putting your head in the sand in all the ways that you're responsible, and then also issuing decrees about the Nazis out there, mm-hmm. then I don't know what is more American than that.
Shit. So things that are happening right now are really, like, I've never seen talk about Palestine in this way, like, on Instagram and all, like, you know what I mean, outside of, like, leftists. And I'm not saying that's happening all over, like, MSNBC is not talking about it, like, mainstream is not talking about it, but people who were not talking about it are talking about it. And there's a lot of actions this weekend and probably ongoing even still when you're hearing this, and also there's BDS movements, like, you can find online about how to, like, support that. And I'm also really appreciating the leadership of course, Palestinians, but also American Jews. Like, it must be a mind fuck to be an American Jew, right? Like, you are, the amount of propaganda and I sense that there is.
Or an Israeli Jew too, right? I mean, there are a lot of Israeli yeah. Jews who don't support what their government is doing.
Absolutely.
I just want to acknowledge
absolutely
that.
Yeah,
right. Or Palestinian Jews, you know what I mean? They I'm sure they got a lot of shame going on right now too,
right? So, you know, that part is complex, I imagine. You know, I'm not a Jewish person, but I can sense that there is a lot of just mind fuck happening right now. I've been following Jewish Voice for Peace and If Not Now, which are two orgs who seem like they're doing some really good work.
I think it's also for anybody out there who feels like, wow, this isn't what's being talked about in my community. I'm surprised to hear this. I'm not seeing this. So a couple of things. One, maybe if your social media that you use is more Facebook than, say, Twitter, or maybe even also Instagram, you might want to think about that, because, you know, not that there aren't posts about this on Facebook, but it is night and day. When I go on to Twitter, and part of it is who I follow, but I follow leftists and progressives. And so when I go onto Twitter, this is the only conversation that I am seeing. When I go onto Facebook, that's not true. And when I go onto Instagram, I'd say that it's a mix. And so, you know, I think this is going to be something that will probably be come up a lot in terms of where we're getting our information from. And not that Twitter is some sort of non, you know, I mean, it's still big tech and censored and all of that. And we talked some last week or last episode about that censorship that is happening on this very issue. But, you know, you just, if you're not seeing this conversation, then you need to do the work to get better sources, because you're in the dark, and there's things you can do about that. And you know, the ignorance is dangerous here.
I also want to just touch back briefly to, you know, what you were saying about sort of like the internal struggle of being, you know, an American Jew who in several ways feels responsible for this genocide. But also to acknowledge that the role that Israel plays on preying on young American Jews to come and settle. And as someone who in my early 20s took a birthright trip, which if you don't know, these are these trips funded, you get a free trip to Israel, basically, in their attempt to further settle Israel and pull American Jews there. And, you know, I had been raised a very pro-Palestinian, had no doubts going there with that. You know, I probably had some, you know, deep naiveties of what my participation in that trip meant. But was very, it was important to witness the severity of the brainwashing, the severity of, I mean, we were given, you know, these kids in their, you know, early 20s, we were, you know, taken all around, partied up, like, you know, alcohol up the wazoo. Some of these kids were like 18, you know, it was like, woohoo, like partying it up, which was the big thing. You know, we want to like make you feel as whatever as, but that we know, given like double person or sleeping bags, you know, and told like, yeah, make Jewish babies, like, if you get together, whoa, if you get pregnant, like, we will pay for your wedding and your honeymoon in Israel.
What?
And, like, yeah, like, really crazy. So no shame in get here and fill these spaces so we can continue to push out the Arab
and so
population.
And to be clear, too, and maybe we can include in the show notes, you know, some places where people could go to see firsthand. So when you're saying get in these spaces, what we're talking about is literally other people's homes, Palestinian homes that are already there, people who have, you know, been living out their lives and are just being literally occupied, you know, not in just the military way that Millie talked about at the beginning, but, you know, just imagine if somebody just walked into your home and was like, I live here now. And that's what's happening all over the place. That's just mainstream commonplace. And so then you're displaced and you have to live on the sidewalk outside your home, or you have to go live with relatives and then hope that, you know, and people in their families have this happen to them over and over again. So they'll go somewhere else, find another place to be. And then, you know, a couple years later, another settler will occupy and forcibly remove them from their house.
Yeah, and I mean, don't have any picture of shacks in the desert, okay? This is a modern,
city.
You know, this looks like, you know, you're walking in, you know, Phoenix, Arizona, or some other Sacramento, some other big metropolitan city. This is not, like, underdeveloped. These were thriving communities that are being pushed out. And pushed out is like a very delicate word, you know?
Ripped
too delicate.
Out,
right?
I think I'm going to include a link in the show notes to this exchange that I don't know if it made the rounds outside of Twitter, but, you know, there was an exchange. This was kind of before things really ramped up. So this was maybe like a week and a half ago. And it is in front of a nice home, you know, a normal, nice, like, family home. And this Israeli guy was talking to the woman who had lived there, who was being displaced by him. And it was just the most chilling exchange, because what he was saying was, because she just kept saying, it's my home. Like, the most basic truth, right, to the situation. This is my home. I have been living here. And he said, I'm, you know, basically like shrugging his shoulders, I'm sorry about your situation, but if it weren't me, it would be somebody else. You're not getting this home back. And I think it was a really important thing for people to see, just that basic level of conversation that happens when, you know, because there's no way you can relate to the Israeli guy. You can only relate to this woman who,
and it's not an isolated incident too. So like when you watch it, understand, like I was telling you know, folks, before we got started recording, my sister went to Palestine, Rowan is it like 8 years ago, and they had a conversation with a family that the same, you know, it's like, this is a constant. It's constant and it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. And it's the norm. Imagine if this was the society that we lived in, that people could just come into your home and steal it from you right underneath you. And there's no, you have no legal recourse. The police and everybody is not on your side at all. And it is because you're not a real human in the eyes of that government and those people. And so it doesn't really matter what you think or what you need. That's not their problem. It's like, you know, if you had mice in your house and you needed to get them out.
Even to the point of recognizing Arabs as some sort of subhuman is the legal status. There are two different ID cards that permit you to do completely different things. One, if you are a Jewish citizen, and you must be Jewish to be a citizen of Israel under law, like, you know, and then here is the second ID as a Palestinian, where you have to get a permit to travel to Gaza or out. You know, you have to get a, you can't vote. You have, you know, less rights, clearly on paper. Like, if that isn't oppression, blatant.
And the just crazy twisted reality of the Jewish people having gone through the Holocaust and Nazi Germany and having to wear Stars of David. You know, I mean, everything about this is just so just like, how can this even be possible? That these are the same people who had to deal with that, and then this is the government, and you know, and I think that's, you know, it is a major mindfuck, and it's also so clear that, you know, when we as people impose trauma on people, it creates some really, really distorted, horrible things that is just horrifying.
And you know, going back to people escaping this traumatic, you know, well, way, way more than traumatic.
One of the worst things that humans have done. Jews.
Then they collect them all and say, go to this place. This is yours. You'll be safe. Except, oops, this is already someone's place. And we're going to have to exterminate them to let you go.
Well, actually, we're going to let you do the exterminating, because that isn't very pleasant.
Right, right.
So why don't you take your young people when they turn 20 and you do it? We'll give you all the money and
we'll give you the guns.
But this was the solution given to a Jewish people who was unsafe anywhere else in Europe at that time.
So twisted.
Right. Right. People who needed safety and were vulnerable and had just had a horrific.
The most horrific.
I don't even know. The most horrific. And then you give them the illusion of safety. But in order to have that illusion of safety, you need to kill these indigenous people. So
right, which, like, what happened with Germany, right? We screwed them so bad. Their population was so desperate and fearful and ready for, like, you know, health, that they, you know, were completely brainwashed into, you know, the rise of the Nazi regime that, you know, kicked that off. So it's just so cyclical. It's disgusting.
So extremely agitating, and there were other things that we talked about, but at the end of the day, it was like, this is what's going. And, you know, as Millie said, you'll be hearing this after we're talking right now, and my hope is that this eye-opening and the falling away of the propaganda and the unearthing of truth will just continue, and part of how we do that is we get out and join the protests in solidarity and turn this into something that looks very, very different than every single other time that Israel has gone on a massacre warpath in our lifetimes.
And at a very base level, don't buy any Israeli produced products. Like, we're going back to the BDS thing. Like, that has been, you know, a helpful tactic to show support in the U.S., you know, as individuals, but also, you know, pressing larger institutions such as universities to call on that.
Absolutely.
And we will put links in the show description that explains what BDS is, and also, you know, the products that you would want to avoid.
And how you can support BDS and join that movement.
Thank you a lot, Millie, for framing that out so well and bringing it up here. And I appreciate that. Free Palestine.